This is how I picture it. A spindly middle-aged mathematician with a soaring mind, a sunken heart, and bad skin is being thrown about the back of a carriage in the bone-hollowing cold of a German January. Since his youth, he has been inscribing into family books and friendship albums his personal motto, borrowed from a verse by the ancient poet Perseus. Oh, the cares of man! How much of everything is futile? He has weathered personal tragedies that would level most. He is now racing through the icy alabaster expanse of the countryside in the precarious hope of averting another. 4 days after Christmas and 2 days after his 44th birthday, a letter from his sister has informed him that their widowed mother is on trial for witchcraft, a fact for which he holds himself responsible. He has written the world's first work of science fiction, a clever allegory advancing the controversial Copernican model of the universe, describing the effects of gravity decades before Newton formalized it into a law, envisioning speech synthesis centuries before computers, and presaging space travel 300 years before the moon landing. The story, intended to counter superstition with science through symbol and metaphor inviting critical thinking, has instead affected the deadly indictment of his elderly, illiterate mother. The year is 1617. His name is Johannes Kepler, perhaps the unluckiest man in the world, perhaps the greatest scientist who ever lived. He inhabits a world in which God is mightier than nature, the devil more real and more omnipresent than gravity. All around him, people believe that the sun revolves around the earth every 24 hours, set into perfect circular motion by an omnipotent creator. The few who dare support the tendentious idea that the earth rotates around its axis while revolving around the sun believe that it moves along a perfectly circular orbit. Kepler would disprove both beliefs, coin the word orbit, and quarry the marble out of which classical physics would be sculpted. He would be the first astronomer to develop a scientific method of predicting eclipses and the first to link mathematical astronomy to material reality. The first astrophysicist by demonstrating that physical forces move the heavenly bodies in calculable ellipses. All of this he would accomplish while drawing horoscopes, espousing the spontaneous creation of new animal species rising from bogs and oozing from tree bark, and believing the earth itself to be an ensouled body that has digestion, that suffers illness, that inhales and exhales like a living organism. 3 centuries later, the marine biologist and writer Rachel Carson would reimagine a version of this view, woven of science and stripped of mysticism, as she makes ecology a household word. Kepler's life is a testament to how science does for reality what Plutarch's thought experiment, known as the Ship of Theseus, does for the self. In the ancient Greek allegory, Theseus, the founder king of Athens, sailed triumphantly back to the great city after slaying the mythic Minotaur on Crete. For 1,000 years, his ship was maintained in the harbour of Athens as a living trophy and was sailed to Crete annually to reenact the victorious voyage. As time began to corrode the vessel, its components were replaced one by one: new planks, new oars, new sails, until no original part remained. Was it then, Plutarch asks, the same ship? There is no static, solid self. Throughout life, our habits, beliefs, and ideas evolve beyond recognition. Our physical and social environments change. Almost all of our selves are replaced. Yet we remain, to ourselves, who we are. So with science, bit by bit, discoveries reconfigure our understanding of reality. This reality is revealed to us only in fragments. The more fragments we perceive and pass, the more lifelike the mosaic we make of them. But it is still a mosaic, a representation, imperfect and incomplete, however beautiful it may be, and subject to unending transfiguration. 3 centuries after Kepler, Lord Kelvin would take the podium at the British Association of Science in the year 1900 and declare, "There is nothing new to be discovered in physics now. All that remains is more and more precise measurement." At the same moment in Zurich, the young Albert Einstein is incubating the ideas that would converge into his revolutionary conception of space-time, irreversibly transfiguring our elemental understanding of reality. Even the farthest seers can't bend their gaze beyond their era's horizon of possibility, but the horizon shifts with each incremental revolution as the human mind peers outward to take in nature, then turns inward to question its own givens. We sieve the world through the mesh of these certitudes, tautened by nature and culture, but every once in a while, whether by accident or conscious effort, the wire loosens and the kernel of a revolution slips through.